This Dharma talk by Mayor Chapman was recorded on December 16, 2017 at the Women's Retreat at Holy Wisdom Monastery in Middleton, Wisconsin.
Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, a great teacher in the Shambhala tradition, said, "The path of fearlessness begins with the discovery of fear. This ubiquitous nervousness provides a stepping stone so we can step over our fear. We have to make a definite move to cross over the boundary from cowardice to bravery." Tonight I'd like to explore how we can help our brave and fearless hearts companion fear as our friend whenever it arises. Please remember, although feeling fear is part of being alive, our gender conditioning as women creates especially deep neural pathways for getting pulled into it. And fear is always a wake-up call that something feels threatening to our well-being. Regardless of whether it's provoked by an external danger caused by our government, politics, world conditions, or a threat to a dear one, or an inner conditioned fear about oneself, we need to build our heart's resilience so we can stay steady in the face of it. Although we know we can't make the world how we want it to be, we can control how we relate to the reality of groundlessness. We can choose how we relate to fear. We can empower ourselves to relate to it from our wholeness, strength, and our true nature. Fear is ultimately rooted in concerns about what will happen to me, our ideas of self. Fearing some loss or harm to our body, mind, or spirit, we're afraid we won't be able to bear it. We won't survive it, either physically or mentally. So let's first look at what the teachings say about self and our true nature. The Buddha taught that beyond the experience of our conditioned mind, those habits of perception that sweep us up in fear and misery, our Buddha nature, our awakened self, is always here. It's like the blue sky. And as we know, beyond the temporary weather conditions on the surface of the planet, the blue sky is always here, stable, unchanging. In the same way, regardless of our internal weather of the moment, the dark clouds and storms of fear, worry, anxiety, loneliness, despair, the calm, clear blue sky of our true nature is always here, shining. This is so reassuring, isn't it? There's another metaphor that I love that beautifully illustrates the stability of our awakened self. This is the story of the Golden Buddha. Perhaps you know it. For centuries, a clay statue of a large Buddha sat in a temple in Thailand. Its origins were unknown, but it became a central aspect of the temple, the monks tending faithfully to the statue, fixing cracks in the clay as it dried out in the sun and heat over the years. One day, when a monk was repairing an especially large crack, he peered into it to see how deep the crack ran, and to his surprise, saw a golden reflection. Curious, he pulled off a piece of the dried clay and discovered more gold beneath the clay, and then more gold, and more gold. When all the clay was removed, the now famous Golden Buddha was fully revealed. We could say the Golden Buddha represents our true nature, the basic goodness of our unconditioned mind that is always here. And the clay that covered the statue for so long symbolizes the grit and grime of our conditioned mind and incorrect views of self and reality. I love this metaphor because it reminds us that no matter what happens, no matter how many negative habits our mind has, how much fear, doubt, or shame we have about ourselves, underneath it all, undisturbed and unaffected by all this clay, our true nature, our wisdom, is always here, shining, waiting to be accessed. This view is so loving and optimistic. And we see evidence of our basic goodness and inherent intelligence in our deep desires to love and be loved, to be kind, generous, and compassionate, to prefer connection rather than disconnection, to prefer stability rather than chaos. When we accept the truth of our authentic experience and explore it mindfully, we directly access the wisdom, intelligence, and stability of our true nature. The more we can experience this reality by letting go of the conditioned ideas of self, dwelling more and more in the truth of the present moment, the less caught up we are in fear, and the more confidence and trust we have in our true nature. We are finding our gold, our inner wealth. To truly comprehend the existence of our awakened self, Buddhism teaches that there are two dimensions of reality, historical and ultimate. Recognizing both dimensions enables us to live free from fear. Let's use the metaphor of our wave and water to help us understand this. When we look at a wave, which is the historical dimension, it appears to have a beginning and an end. It can be big or little, high or low, as compared to other waves. The wave might be here right now, and then later it's gone. The same is true for the historical experience of ourself and others. We are born, we live our life, and eventually we die and appear to no longer exist. This is terrifying to us. Our greatest fear is that when we die, we'll become nothing. And when our loved one dies, we fear they'll be gone forever from us. This is the view we assume in the historical dimension of reality. When we shift to the ultimate dimension of reality and touch into the wave more deeply, we experience water. Water is the ultimate dimension of the wave. In the historical dimension, we think in terms of life and death, being and not being. But in the ultimate dimension, these notions don't exist. If the wave is capable of experiencing the water within itself, it can live the life of water at the same time and has no fear of being and not being, coming and going. Thus, the wave's true nature has no birth or death, no beginning or end, and that is the nature of water. We are like the wave. We have a historical dimension. We've been born into this body, and this body will die. We believe we're now existing, and before our birth, we didn't exist. Because we get caught in these ideas, we feel fear. Yet when we connect 100% with present moment reality, free from worries about the past or future, free from attachment to ideas of self, simply one with what is, we touch our true nature, the ultimate dimension of ourselves. We experience this directly in meditation in those moments when we let go of the stories of self and other, when we've let go of stories altogether, and we're simply resting in open awareness, calm, stable, peaceful. In this dimension, there's no birth or death, simply changing forms of phenomena. We're like the wave being in touch with its true nature as water. The wave is always water. It doesn't come from water and return to water. The wave is already and always water. When we're in touch with our no birth, no death nature, our true nature that is always here, we have no fear. Then, when a cloud is formed from the heat of sunlight penetrating the water, creating water vapor that arises into a cloud, we can say water was its previous life, and being a cloud is its continuation, its new form. Similarly, our true nature has no coming or going. It has no birth or death. Birth and death are paired dualistic concepts like coming and going, self and other, immortality and annihilation. Ultimately, we didn't come from anywhere and we will not go anywhere. When conditions are sufficient, we manifest in a certain way. When conditions are no longer sufficient, we no longer manifest in that way. But this doesn't mean we don't exist. Even though we say our loved one or a great teacher has died, they are still among us. They continue to exist in many forms. Their spirit goes on. I have a number of dear friends, completely sane, stable women, who have recounted experiences where someone dear to them has died, and out of seemingly nowhere, that being makes their presence known to them, often sending them a helpful message. Perhaps you've had experiences where you've lost someone dear to you and found yourself touched by a sense of them through some surprising event or an experience in nature. A friend who was grief-stricken after her husband of 40 years died began to feel a strong connection with him through owls showing up day after day as she walked the same path they had walked daily for years. Then one day she told me she now felt great relief because her sense of him had shifted and was now securely resting in her heart. She said he was now safe in her heart and would always be with her. After that, the sighting of owls ended. A client who lost her partner of 24 years told me of a moment when friends were visiting and talking about her beloved partner, when all of a sudden one friend said, "Look at this photograph of her." They all turned to look at a framed picture on the table next to them. To their amazement, a triangle-shaped shaft of golden light suddenly appeared from the window and had landed precisely on her partner's face in the photo, as if to say, "I'm here with you all right now." And several of my friends who were intimately involved in the care and passing of our dear friend and Dharma buddy, Sherry Maples, have had profoundly vivid experiences of her presence, voice, and wise counsel after she passed from her body this summer. So to understand and experience that on the ultimate dimension of reality, we aren't born and we don't die, but rather we continue on in a different form, can be deeply comforting and freeing. When we touch our true nature, we can transcend our root fear of annihilation. This ultimate view of reality also reveals that nothing exists independently or separately, but rather everything is interconnected and interdependent. Everything that comes to be arises from a combination of causes and conditions coming together. The zafu or chair you're sitting on doesn't exist independently. It hasn't magically poofed into existence, but rather it exists because of innumerable elements, factors, causes, and conditions that came together to create it. Thus, it does not have a separate independent self-existence. This is ultimately true for us too. We are here on this retreat and experiencing ourselves as we are due to innumerable causes and conditions coming together. When we take the time to be quiet, we realize the amazing web of connections that have brought us to this very moment. Countless people, conversations, encounters, influences, some wonderful and nourishing, others difficult, challenging, and painful, have brought us to this exact time and place. In this way, we can understand that we do not ever exist separately from each other. Instead, we are all interconnected, and we experience ourselves as we do right now because of all these conditions arising moment by moment, continuously. This is also referred to in Buddhism as emptiness, meaning everything that exists is empty of a separate, independently existing self. The more we can understand and actually experience this both as we meditate and live mindfully, connecting with our authentic experience of the moment, the more we naturally let go of the conditioned ideals of self and other and can live in the freedom of non-self or selflessness. Instead of habitually anchoring our attention in the other, as we've been trained to do in our gender conditioning, being selfless is simply being centered or balanced in our attention. Our awareness is whole and inclusive. As Ayakema, a wonderful Vipassana teacher and Buddhist nun, said, "Being without attachment to self means that we act without self-display and without craving for results. When we aren't trying to prove ourselves to anyone, which is always based on the fear that we aren't enough, we naturally relax and experience the spaciousness of inner peace, our Buddha nature. We can rest in our present moment experience just as it is, free from ego thrashing around thinking something should be different, especially that I should be different. We naturally connect with the reality of the present moment, whatever it is, sadness, calmness, irritation, fear, and their sensations of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. We are just as we are in the present. We have no pretense to be anything else. We may feel vulnerable in this openness, but also empowered and naturally confident because there's no judgment about ourselves. There's no self to judge. Completely accepting our present moment authentic experience, free from clinging to a self, free from fear, naturally gives rise to confidence. In contrast, when we're absorbed into the mind's storyline about a me, who we think we're supposed to be, our attention is always in the future or the past, not here in this moment. Either we are recreating a memory of the past self or imagining a future self, neither of which exists in the now. This constructed idea of me is wobbly, and we're easily knocked off center as we fall into worrying about the other or ourselves, and we're swept inevitably into insecurity and fear. When we can drop into non-self by releasing the storyline and bring attention fully to our senses, we are centered again in the present, able to respond skillfully to whatever is happening with the natural wisdom of our true nature. As the wise Zen teacher Dogen said, to forget yourself is to be one with all things. I had an experience some years ago that taught me a lot about fear when I learned I had colon cancer and would need to undergo surgery to remove the tumor and determine the extent of cancer in my body. After the initial tsunami of fear moved through me, one of my first responses was feeling gratitude for the practice. I had the clear sense that mindfulness would be invaluable on this journey, and this experience would deepen my understanding of it. In preparation, I informed my clients I'd be taking time off work to go through treatment. I'll never forget one client's response. He said he'd had colon cancer when he was 25. He was now 42. And I remember him immediately thinking, he's still alive, it didn't kill him, good. Then he said that the most painful part of all of it was the fear he'd felt. Yes, fear. Next, I immediately rallied all my resources, began doing imagery work on the tumor, and called my friends together for two healing circles where they laid their hands on me, imagining complete healing. I also decided, since this was so deeply frightening, that I needed to face all of my fears directly so I could find the wisdom I needed to be steady and stay open to the challenge that lay ahead. I wanted to do everything I could to create the best possible conditions for my body's recovery. Then, no matter what the outcome, I knew I'd learn a lot, deepen my practice, and have no regrets. So, first, I challenged myself to brainstorm and write down all of my fears. I filled five flip chart-sized pieces of paper, and they ran the gamut from fear of losing my hair, to what will people think of me, to physical pain and sickening nausea, to dying. And it was very helpful to name and see them all. Next, I decided to explore the fears in a meditation, hoping that in that expanded inner space, wisdom would be more accessible to me. After getting myself settled with the breath, I invited my mind to intentionally run those scary stories until I could feel the sensation of fear in my body. Then, shifting attention from the stories to the feelings, I opened to them with tons of curiosity. I felt a kind of heavy contraction, a kind of pulling in, a painful twisting, grasping deep in my belly, deep in my core. It was very unpleasant in feeling tone. I coached myself to relax around the sensations, letting them be just as they were, and I practiced cradling them in my awareness with as much spaciousness as I could muster. Then, after a few minutes, to my surprise, I suddenly realized that this inner space was dark, quiet, and still. Without the stories, this didn't actually feel scary at all. It was empty, still, quiet, not scary. This was surprising to me. Resting in that space, after a bit, I asked, well then, what do I really need? What's a wise and kind way to respond to myself with this? After a few minutes, I heard the word courage. I needed courage. Courage. I wondered what I knew about courage and if I'd ever been brave. So then I asked myself, when have I been courageous in my life? Gradually, memories began to emerge of times in my life when I actually had been courageous. Giving a passionate speech, giving birth to my babies, risking being emotionally vulnerable, a solo canoe trip, coming out as a lesbian. Then I selected the strongest memory of bravery and encouraged myself to recall it as vividly as I could so I could evoke that state in my heart and feel the sensations of courage in my body. As I concentrated on remembering this experience, stepping into it as fully as I could, I began to feel my belly relax and soften, my heart space expand and open up, and I felt a surge of energy in my body, along with a palpable sense of determination and strength in my mind and heart. After a bit, I had the clear sense now that I knew I could go through the surgery and be okay no matter what was discovered on that operating table. I felt the confidence and faith that I could handle it. From that point on, as I moved closer to the scheduled surgery, whenever the fear arose, I'd pause and note, yep, here's fear. I take a quick look at the specific story, then shift to feeling the sensation of it, relax around the sensation, and wait in that open-hearted space for the sensation of courage to emerge. By practicing this over and over, by the time I was on the gurney rolling into the operating room, I was confident, calm, and ready for whatever was going to happen. So what is courage and what is faith? Courage, bravery, is the quality of mind or spirit that enables us to face danger with awareness, steadiness, confidence, and resolution. It's the fundamental openness to face the hardest truths. Courage makes room for all the fear, pain, joy, irony, and mystery of life. It involves and requires greatness of heart. It's about inviting our heart to open and expand around those vulnerable feelings. You know courage. We all know courage. We've all been courageous many times. Each of us have faced many difficult challenges in our lives that have been scary. We've made it through them, and we will continue to. It's useful to recall those times we've been courageous. It's important to know we have it in us to be brave. As I went through 6 months of chemo following the surgery, friends would sometimes say to me, "You're being so courageous, Mare." Quite honestly, I didn't feel I was being brave. I was simply determined to do all I could to go through this successfully and with as much ease as possible. It was very clear what I needed to do, and so every day was a practice in doing that. Courage requires clarity and determination. The clarity to see reality accurately as it is right now. And it requires accepting that reality, turning to face it squarely with all of our wits about us. Through this clear seeing of what is and the radical acceptance of it, because what we're turning towards isn't easy or pleasant, we mobilize our determination and energy to act skillfully, to do what we need to do to handle it. However, because fear creates such a painful state, our habit to instinctively contract and pull in cuts off access to our basic intelligence just when we need it the most. So we need a way to facilitate our heart and mind's natural spaciousness so we can find our wisdom when we're abducted by fear. Well, loving kindness to the rescue here. Metta, the loving kindness practice, gives us the spiritual first aid we need. By wholeheartedly concentrating on offering ourselves those kind phrases over and over, may I be safe and protected. May I be peaceful. May I trust I can handle this. Our mind and heart naturally shift to a calmer, more open state, and we can access the intelligence of our true nature again. So please, when you find yourself strongly drawn into a fearful state, dose yourself liberally with metta. We can't overdose on it. The more metta, the better. Compassion is another vital ingredient in our spiritual first aid kit. It facilitates building our courage. Compassion is a quality of our true nature that arises spontaneously when we genuinely open our heart to the pain we feel. It's the quivering of the open heart in response to this pain. It helps us stay open and steady so we can bear the pain with less suffering. By saying to ourselves as sincerely as we can, "I'm so sorry this is so painful for me right now. I'm so sorry this is so difficult right now," creates the inner spaciousness that naturally allows access to our wisdom. It's from this open-hearted place we discover what we truly need when we ask, "What's a wise and kind way to respond to myself right now?" Because courage is developed in the midst of difficulty, monks and nuns of the past were encouraged to deliberately go to places that scared them, like graveyards, to practice working with fear. Certainly, both our conditioning as women and the challenges of these dangerous times gives us plenty of material to work with. We don't need to go to graveyards. Even though we much prefer the pleasantness of security and safety, trying to live in a cocoon of maximum security can be a prison. It can make our lives small and confined. So we might look honestly at the ways we try to keep ourselves safe to avoid the discomfort of feeling vulnerable. Perhaps there are habitual ways we hold ourselves back, don't speak our truth out of fear of upsetting the other person, or don't follow through on things we really care about. These patterns may be fueled by habits of minimizing ourselves or running old stories that we don't matter. It's time to challenge ourselves to be as big as we can be. It's time to be bold and brave. As my 11-year-old granddaughter Addie said, if your dreams don't scare you, they aren't big enough. When we make choices to step bravely beyond our comfort zone, we expand our growing edge and build our confidence. Each time we do this and see that we can find inner stability with the uncertainties of life, we deepen our confidence and faith. We see that courage and faith are linked together. Having faith in our ability to stay connected with ourselves as we face fear and step through it helps us grow courage. In turn, experiencing our ability to be courageous and handle what's difficult grows faith that we can handle it. So let's explore faith a little bit more deeply. Faith is the confidence that there are things we can rely on that support our well-being and anchor us to our fundamental sanity. Faith recognizes something greater beyond ourselves. It creates a container that's big enough to hold the reality of how things are, as well as the mystery. Genuine faith is an inclusive, open intelligence that's searching for a sense of ease or positivity. It's searching for the answers to our questions about suffering, happiness, life, and reality. This kind of faith creates a warmth in our hearts. It's a resting place that gives us the courage to openly question the world and our experience. It's not about putting on blinders and believing that what we're told, but rather discovering for ourselves what's true. The Buddha valued faith tremendously and said, "Faith is the beginning of all good things." But what exactly are we placing our faith in that's truly reliable? Perhaps we rely on the refuge of the three jewels in Buddhism, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Or we may rely on God, or simply a basic trust in the goodness of the world, although that basic trust may be harder to come by right now. One of the factors that first drew me to mindfulness was the Buddha's encouragement to trust our own data. He's reported to have said, "Don't take my word for what I'm teaching is the truth. Check it out for yourself. See from your own direct experience what's true." So rather than trusting some expert's or exalted teacher's view and advice, it's through our own practice, by learning to relate to our direct, authentic experience mindfully, that we discover for ourselves what's actually true and reliable. We can develop faith in the practice when we see that by opening to the moment's difficulty with mindfulness, learning to stay steady, curious, open, and on our own side, learning to release attachment to ideas of self, offering compassion and loving kindness, we witness how our experience changes and we find our way through it. I know this is certainly true for me. Over the years I've been practicing, I've developed deep faith in the method of the practice. We can develop faith and trust in our own true nature, our blue sky mind, our inner gold, by realizing over and over again that when we're quiet, calm, resting in the spaciousness of the moment, and we sincerely inquire about what's needed, our basic intelligence offers insights, wise and loving reminders, and guidance. Our true nature is always awake, wise, loving, and stable. It is our own natural intelligence and basic goodness that allows us to discern between something that supports our well-being and something that doesn't. Even our desire to be free from pain, free from fear, and to be loving, peaceful, and happy reflects our innate knowing that freedom is ultimately possible. Developing trust in this deep longing to be free is our light coming through. We can develop faith in the profound teachings of the Dharma, the facts of life, that there is suffering, impermanence, and ultimately selflessness. We see over and over again that it is the habits of the mind to cling to what we want, to attach to a fixed sense of self, to automatically believe and be carried away by our thoughts and emotions that create our misery. Understanding the ever-changing flow of life with all of its interconnectedness, interdependence, movements, and potentials opens us to a bigger sense of who we are and what's possible. Since we never know what's in our future, and we certainly have very limited ability to control what does happen, I often find a wonderful refuge in the truth of not knowing. and being able to rest in the mystery of life. Sometimes when I realize I'm caught up in hope and fear, clinging to what I hope will happen and fearing what I don't want to happen, when I remind myself of the wisdom of don't know mind, I immediately relax. I can drop the mind's stories on the spot and abide fully in the present moment. Instant relief from fear. Through these years of practice, I trust that I know how to help myself stay in the present moment with what is. Can I be steady in just this moment with what's here? Not the next 60 moments or the next month of moments, but just this very moment? Every moment matters. And this moment is the mother of the next moment. Having faith and confidence that I can do this in moments of big fear, pain, and uncertainty is deeply freeing. Faith enables us, despite our fear, to get as close as we can to the truth of the present moment so we can open our hearts to it fully. It enables us to be fully engaged with life rather than pull back from it, and also realize we aren't in control of how things will unfold. Having faith doesn't mean we don't make an effort to alleviate suffering. Faith allows us to make that effort guided by an inclusive vision of life with all of life's complexities and messiness. Just as with courage, we acknowledge and face what we can't control, and out of that open heart space, find skillful action of what we can do, faith helps us move forward into the unknown of the next moment with confidence. No matter what happens in our life, it is faith that energizes us to try again, to open to our vulnerability again, to trust again. It helps us go forward instead of giving up in despair. As Sharon Salzberg says in her wonderful book on faith, faith is an inner quality that unfolds as we learn to trust our deepest experience. Faith is the animation in the heart that says, I choose life. I align myself with the potential inherent in life. Faith is ignited the moment we say, I'm going to try. I'm going to go for this. Even so, cultivating the courage and faith to help our hearts open bravely so we can work skillfully with fear takes effort and energy. And in these times we're living, with our fears and anxieties understandably dialed up, we may find ourselves growing weary in this process. It's vitally important to find a balance between the exertion required to stay mindful and replenishing that energy. Just like our bodies need the right amount of nutrients and exercise to stay healthy, so do our hearts and minds. We need a balance between output and input. Otherwise, we'll become depleted and burn out. And when that's the case, we're far more likely to be under the rule of those conditioned habits that create our misery. We need to find ways to gladden our hearts and minds. An experience while on retreat 9 years after going through cancer treatment taught me my vital lesson about this. On the first afternoon of the 7-day retreat, in the middle of sitting meditation, I discovered a lump in my breast. This triggered an avalanche of fear as my mind went immediately to imagining it was cancer, going through the yuckiness of treatment again, fears of telling my loved ones, and imagining a slow, horrible cancer death. Of course, I went to work right away, working with these reactions, coming back to the breath over and over, working with the bodily sensations of fear and dread, offering massive doses of loving kindness and compassion, letting go of attachment to self over and over, and finding moments of respite by resting in don't know mind. Even though I could hold the larger perspective of seeing this as an opportunity to learn more about befriending fear, as we know, there are no escapes, no distractions while on retreat. So it was grim, hard, painful work. After several days of practicing intensively with this, I went to my first check-in group with our teacher, Christina Feldman. When I told the group what I was dealing with, everyone reacted with an anguished gasp, "Oh no!" This compassionate response was very comforting, since I was also struggling with condemning myself for being so whipped around by fear. Clearly, every woman could empathize with my fright. After confirming that how I'd been working with this mind state was right on, Christina suggested that in those moments and periods when fear wasn't so prominent, I should cultivate states of gladness in my heart and mind. To do this, I was to recall and focus on whatever I truly appreciated in my life, or what I felt grateful for, or whatever brought me happiness and joy in the present moment. She explained that by doing this, I'll build more resilience and steadiness in the mind, and replenish the energy that's being used up in working with fear. So I took this to heart by using a number of walking periods to enjoy the woods behind the retreat center, focusing on the beauty of nature, the sighting and sounds of the chickadees and cardinals, having fun climbing on some of the great rock formations, and enjoying the flow and sounds of the water in the small creek that traverses through the forest. This triggered remembering other beautiful experiences I had in nature, and I let myself thoroughly enjoy those memories. I also devoted several whole meditations to focusing on and feeling all that I appreciated in my life, all my good fortune, all the blessings of my life. I remembered precious moments of deep connection with my children, touching into the vastness of my love for them, as well as the other loves in my life, and I found my heart welling up with tears of tenderness and joy. I encouraged myself to feel all this as deeply as I could. I found these practices helped immensely. They gave me energy and helped clear out what felt like heavy, dark, stale, fearful air with refreshing, bright, lighter air in my heart and mind. As the days of the retreat continued, even though those scary thoughts about the lump still arose, and I worked with them mindfully each time, I gradually grew more tolerant of their uncomfortable feelings. In fact, by the end of the retreat, those sensations were quite subdued and no longer scared me. Although I didn't know what lay ahead as I headed home, I felt calm and confident that I could handle whatever happened. I knew I would be practicing taking it one moment at a time as I investigated the reality of this lump. But the fear now felt like my companion that, instead of scaring me, was now reminding me to be awake, mindful, compassionate, courageous, and to remember the faith that I do have in the practice, the Dharma, and our true nature. There are many ways we can gladden our heart, and I think it's helpful to be very intentional about it. It's important to take it on as a practice. Our true nature has an innate cheerfulness, so we are wise to find it and activate it. We can encourage ourselves to find our humor and to chuckle and laugh at the silly things, as well as the antics of our minds. I mean, really, some of the stories my mind creates are so ridiculous and hilarious when I can step back and see them clearly. Getting out in nature as I did, with the intention to thoroughly enjoy it, deliberately having fun, laughing, gathering friends for parties, games, dancing, skiing, ice skating, making music together. If we have access to babies, children and pets, dosing ourselves liberally with their innocence, preciousness, and beauty. Practicing generosity in new ways and really noticing its effect on your heart. Letting how good it makes you feel to give freely sink in deeply to your heart and mind. Taking the time to deliberately relax, taking long relaxing soaks in the bath perhaps. Really, there are so many ways to nourish and gladden our hearts, but because our conditioned habit is to tend to others first, putting ourselves last, it's necessary to realize those gladdening the heart practices are essential for our well-being. They are not selfish or frivolous, but they are part of our basic self-care, our basic responsibility in caring for ourselves happily. Really, as long as we're alive, we will experience fear. No matter how deep our faith, when our life feels threatened, we will feel fear. This is natural. But as our faith deepens in our practice, in our Buddha nature, in our understanding of how things are, as we let go of clinging so tightly to ideas of self, our relationship to fear can change. Just like when a teaspoonful of salt is poured into the ocean instead of a glass of water, when our experience of fear is cradled in the vastness of our open, wise heart, we won't contract and shut down. We will still recognize it as fear. We may still feel vulnerable and shaky, but we will stay steady and be able to companion it courageously. And through that brave, open-hearted companioning, we can discover its message and what action with ourself or with another or our community or our world is needed. When we are willing to be vulnerable, and we can stay mindfully steady with that, from that vulnerability, we discover our invincibility. When we understand the ultimate reality of no birth and no death, we realize we have nothing to lose, and we can live fearlessly. When we have nothing to fear, we cannot be dominated, and we are free to live with the unshakable confidence of our true nature in the freedom of being our authentic selves. I want to end with a passage by Barbara Kingsolver from Small Wonder. In my own worst seasons, I've come back from the colorless world of despair by forcing myself to look hard for a long time at a single glorious thing, a flame of red geranium outside my bedroom window, and then another, my daughter in a yellow dress, and another, the perfect outline of a full dark sphere behind the crescent moon, until I learned to be in love with my life again, like a stroke victim retaining new parts of the brain to grasp lost skills. I have taught myself joy over and over again. Let's sit for a moment.